Should we do a pre-roll?
Oh, we got. Yeah, go ahead.
All right. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. Start building your website today at squarespace.com. Enter the offer code ComedyFilmNerds at checkout to get 10% off. Squarespace, build it beautiful.
Pot kettle, build it good.
Hey, everybody, welcome to episode 310, Comedy Film Nerds. You were looking at the sheet of paper on what to say.
I was indeed.
Forgot the name of the show.
So, sure.
We've only done over...
Is this part of the pre-roll?
No, this is the whole... I thought we were starting. You know, I sort of said welcome and then...
You know what happens. We got a lot going on.
You know,
it's hard to remember even where we are sometimes.
With the spoiler apps, we've done over 350 episodes.
Yes,
of this.
Easily.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I haven't had much sleep.
Yeah, you just came back from Lake Tahoe. We got a lot going on.
Thank you.
Oh, you just came back from Tahoe?
Literally yesterday.
Oh, all right.
Had a great time.
How long is that gig? A week?
It's a week, Wednesday to Sunday.
Oh, golly. Okay.
Yeah, that's nice business. So thank you to everybody who came out to the shows. Mm-hmm. That was a lot of fun. Had some Comedy Film Nerd fans. And then, thanks to Howie. He and I went skiing one day.
Oh,
that
great.
Was nice. They have everybody at Sierra Tahoe. That was fun.
So it's nice to know there's snow up there.
Man, they've gotten so much snow this year because, you know, they've been dry for, like, they were really,
yeah.
It was hurting their business. So it's kind of great to see they've had all mm-hmm. this snow. It snowed while I was up there. So, you know, the town was making money. Like, cool. It was doing what it's supposed to.
Do you gamble or anything?
You know, a little. I tried when I was younger. I used to like. Woo.
We all did when we go to casinos in like our 20s.
Right.
Like, oh, this is great.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
No, you lost $600.
Right. Like, and I made $350.
Yeah.
So, I'm losing money on this gig.
So yeah. I'm very.
I'm not going to sleep tonight.
Yeah.
Oh, right. I know. We're gonna stay up all night.
Yeah. Like, woo.
I remember working Vegas in '97, and with Dave Attell. And like, one time I worked with Lopez, one time I worked with Dave Attell.
Oh
and,
my God.
And just like,
party animals.
Oh my God. Like coming like 6 a.m., fumbling into the employee cafeteria after just a boozy night of gamble train wrecking.
Well, my God. I mean, Dave Attell made a show how he couldn't sleep.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're going to be out.
I remember I worked with George Lopez. And we went out, and we just got annihilated. And the next day, we're in the green room, and he's like sitting there talking. And I oh God, I just got up and like had to go because the room was still spinning. I was like still hungover at Showtime. And he comes up, he goes, "What's up, man? Are you pissed off?" I go, "What?" He goes, "I was talking to you, and you just got up and walked out. Like you thought I was like, I was like, I'm out of here,
George. I'm spinning, and I'm violently ill to my tummy. All I've eaten today is a piece of toast.
Yeah,
and I'm blaming you.
Yeah, I need a toast and the milkshake, and I have to go on stage and tell jokes. As do you. So let's focus.
So we got a couple other announcements too.
What?
We got,
yes, we do.
LA Podfest. The dates. Hello,
September 23rd through the 25th. Check it out, guys. Ticketing will be on sale very soon, like in the next week.
Yes, but discounted hotel rooms are available now. If you go to lapodfest.com, you could book the rooms now.
Yeah, because I know a lot of you guys traveling from out of town are like, when are the dates? I need to, you know, make you know, get off from work and all that shit. So
and the discounted rooms are limited, so you want to grab those.
Yep. So
and the Sofitel's a nice hotel.
It is.
Decent food. They're across the street from the Beverly Center.
Mm-hmm. Walking distance, a lot of fun stuff.
Yeah.
You can't go wrong.
Those of you who have come out in the past, you know, inspire the newbies to do it. Many of you guys come out for like a week and you go do a bunch of cool shit before and after the festival. And that's what I recommend. If you can come out, if you're coming in from out of town, man.
A lot of people say you went to Universal or went to Disneyland.
They went
or
to Largo. Yeah. They go to Meltdown. They go to the UCB. They make it just like a comedy pilgrimage.
Yeah, so, it's really cool. So
come on out.
So, yeah, check it out and stay a couple extra days, too, if you like.
And then also the... everyone who won during the Rabble Oscars, the live Oscar commentary, we're going to be sending out your prizes.
Yep, they'll go out this week.
So get ready for that.
And we should introduce our guest.
We haven't formally introduced him. Ladies and gentlemen, Funny Man has been on the show before. Yes,
the comedian, the only comedian I've ever seen that I've worked with that's used the word daguerreotype in a bit.
That's why I'm so popular. I'm huge with the pre-cinema people.
And I was just reading at the time, like, House of Seven Gables, and I'm like, I actually know what that is. That's it.
From the Smartest Man in the World podcast, Mr. Greg Proops, ladies and
gentlemen. Hello, everybody. Hello, Chris. Hello, Graham. Hello, film nerds. I also have my own show called the Greg Proops Film Club. If you're a film nerd and you want to listen to that, I don't know what the latest one up is, but I'm sure it's very good. And we show a film every month at the Sidden Family and then sometimes other places too.
Oh, that's cool. So then what typically do you show?
Well, a lot of 70s pictures. This year we've shown, we had a Preston Sturges Festival for some reason. We had Sullivan's Travels and The Lady Eve back to back, which I would have never done, but it just so happened that way. So two screwball comedies in a row. And then they're doing an 80s independent cinema festival this month at the Cine Family in March. So they're showing She's Gotta Have It and A Thin Blue Line and all the great 80s movies, right? And Malanoche, you know, like all the groovy indie stuff. And so they asked me what I wanted to show, and we wanted to show Do the Right Thing, but they were already showing a Spike Lee one. So we went Times of Harvey Milk, which is a brilliant documentary. From 84 about Harvey Milk's life, the assassination and everything that happened afterwards. So it's the first one that we've shown. One, it's the first documentary we've shown in like 3 years. And two, it's tragic, but it's also triumphant, of course, because now we live 30 years later after the picture was made in a world where gay people can get married and there's only 30 states where they can be arrested for sodomizing each other and for or lose their job for admitting they're gay. So we've made progress and the military lets gay people in now. So, and I think in large part that's due to his pioneering, him and a lot of other people, but him notably, his work as a gay activist and a hero. I mean, I'm from San Francisco, so I'm San Carlos. Let's be more specific. I didn't live in San Francisco when Harvey Milk was supervisor. I was going to the College of San Mateo at the time, but I remember his assassination quite well. And because it happened, Jonestown and that happened within months of each other. So there was a kind of a malaise of the Bay Area that year.
Wow.
Yeah, it was not a happy, happy time.
So then the show at the Cine Family, do you do any sort of like Q&A after or introduction?
Oh, yeah. I do a spiel before, and that's basically the show for about 20 minutes, 30 minutes. And then afterward, we usually talk about the picture for like 10, 15 minutes.
Do you ever have people from the film, like producers?
I've tried, but no, not this time. I'm not a guesty type host. Evidently, I feel like I know goddamn everything about things. So I'll be talking before and after. And what I love is fielding questions. And when they ask you questions about how movies got made or what producers thought, and I'm like, I'm a fan. You know, they'll go, well, how come there wasn't a sequel to this? And I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, I wasn't on set.
Right. I don't work for Paramount. I don't know why they didn't make another.
Well, you could have a segment where you pretend you're one of the producers and you answer specifically every one of those questions.
Just give all of those film festival stock panel. Right. Well, we were shooting and the thing that.
It was in development three times. You know.
Look, we ran up against a wall with funding at the end of the day. And, you know, we tried to go with the Spanish group, but they fell out at the last minute. And so we weren't really able to get the sequel up and underway.
Pre-sales in India were strong.
God. Our Asian market stuff was so huge, but we just... I don't know. I think it was really an aesthetic choice at the end of the day, more than a business choice. I don't come at it as a businessman. I come at it as an artist. And, but sometimes art, you know, runs into a wall, and it's called money. We had to recast. We didn't have anyone,
I'm just booked. Closing my eyes and picturing every film festival panel I've ever...
I listened to the nonsense.
Yeah.
That one, or I like the music people. You know, I'm just trying to keep my head above water. You know, I love the Lord, and, you know, like, I try to keep the haters at bay. You know, like, I acknowledge them, but, you know, I don't like to let them into my world, you know?
You have that many haters for your score on an independent film? That you have to keep them at bay.
Nobody noticed.
How come comics are never allowed to use all the nonsense that film people? If you're in the music industry, you can get on stage and say that you thank God that you made a record. And if we came on stage and went, I want to thank God that I made this comedy special, people would be like, what? Why are you thanking God? Yeah, because his spirit imbued me when I told that knob gag.
Yeah. the hand job piece from high school, I think the Lord.
Uh-huh.
It was divine inspiration.
Eye. Right. Yeah. There was a dark room, and then there was a pinpoint of light, and then the room was flooded with violet. And the next thing I knew, the hand job from high school bit right at the back, holding down the big spot, closing the show. And I want to thank the Lord for that and my family, especially my grandma, who loves my knob gags more than any other older lady in my world.
She loves my molestation piece. Yeah, she's a big fan of that.
She always asks for it when she comes to the show. No, comics have to answer when you go on the morning radio. How do you get your ideas? They're still asking that one.
Yeah, yeah.
And then last week I was in...
Because it's the same DJs from 20 years
yeah,
ago.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, they're all still the same. They're all middle-aged guys. And you've been going to their station for 15 years now, and they still haven't figured out what you do. I was in a news station in Denver last week, and the woman goes, so, Mark Maron had Obama on her show. Podcasts are getting quite popular. And I went, yes, I understand the wireless is sweeping the nation now, too, and the people have them in their cars and in their homes. Like, are you really going to patronize what I do?
Oh, God, because it's so funny. A handful of morning radio shows embraced podcasting and like, oh, we're going to digitize this and it's another ad revenue stream, blah, blah, blah. A lot of them took it as a threat and were like, you know, it was like when mainstream media was like, oh, kids today are getting their news from The Daily Show.
Right.
Yeah, because your fucking news sucks.
Yeah.
And Jon Stewart's the only dude I trust other than you. And the radio, when they do that with the podcasting and they're like, I hear it's taking off. Like, do you not know, like, there's YouTube? Do you not know that there's blogs? Do you not know, like, they think that the whole digital world is just still a handful of kooks?
Right.
You know?
On ham radios out there.
Yeah. Where do you do yours? In Area 51?
I mean, we have that. But
yes,
it's more.
Yes.
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
No, I'll say to them, you know, maybe you're not aware that the top podcasters get millions of downloads a week, as many as if they were a television network.
Right.
Crappy television networks don't get as many viewers as podcasts get. Some of the podcasts get more listeners than a real TV show that you watch on MSNBC or whatever.
And those top shows that you're talking about are now like selling out giant theaters and arenas for their live shows.
Yeah. Yes. And going on world tours.
World tours. Right.
Because it's the internet. Everyone gets it.
Everyone.
Yeah.
That's right. I mean, I'm going to, you go to Australia all the time. I'm going to Belgium and Sweden in the next, and people go, do they get your jokes over there? Yes.
Yeah.
They listen to the podcast.
Yeah.
No one's wandering in off the streets in Belgium going, an English-only show? Terrific. I wonder what this will be like if I can't understand a bloody word of it. You know, like, no, they've heard the goddamn thing. That's why they're interested in going.
And it's a lot of expats, too. It's
always.
Like, it's a mix of expats, but then a lot of people that are just residents that enjoy what you do.
Yeah, I've heard that. I did a tour through China. They're like, God, do they understand you?
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. No, you see, only people who speak Cantonese come to the show.
Yeah,
and then they just fight it out. And these are people who own phones. Like, I always say, people will say, I'll read something off from a newspaper or an item, and people go, really? In the audience? I'm like, everything is in your phone. Why are you saying really to me? Go on your phone, crack a phone open, and instead of looking at your Facebook page or your Snapchat, go to a news page, and you won't be so unbelievably overwhelmed that I dropped a piece of knowledge on you that everyone in the world has access to, because it was in the bloody Washington Post, you know, like, or what? I'm not going to some arcane news source. Like, it's not a guy who lives in a van with a hat on.
Like, which is a great news source.
No, those are good.
That guy's good. That guy's good. Let's not be a dick.
And why would he wear a hat in his van?
Well, so that the radio waves.
Yeah.
A tinfoil hat. So the radio waves. Because of the FBI and Bigfoot.
I can't wait to the tinfoil hat van show. I can't wait to see that show.
No, it's a good
Someone's
show.
Working on it. So let's talk about some movies.
Do we have to?
Well, there's a few.
Tangential.
Now you saw The Race.
Okay, I saw The Race.
Mm-hmm.
I saw the first trailer for this. I was like, wow, a Jesse Owens movie that's not, it's being released in February. Shouldn't this be an Oscar?
Didn't get a lot of prestige on that release.
Right.
And here's why. It's just a by-the-numbers biopic.
Okay.
Like, they just took every biopic scene and they put it in there.
You mean there's the day when he discovers he's faster than everyone else?
Oh, and he's a kid?
Yeah.
And then there's...
Well, it's after an accident. He gets struck by lightning. and then he's the fastest man in the world.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. It's a superhero origin story.
Chris, absolutely. The natural. That's what's he builds a pair of tennis shoes
out of wood. They're wood shoes that make him fast.
And then he builds a windmill.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's.
Is Chadwick Boseman the star of this, or who's the star of the race?
It's a kid you haven't really heard. Oh, okay. Of. That's the thing. It's funny. Everyone's like, well, how come Chadwick Boseman isn't in this movie?
Well, he played Jesse Owens and James Brown. I mean, he played James Richaki Robinson and James Brown.
So, yeah, it's.
And he's a great athlete, so I wonder.
It's just sort of. It really, if you watch that, if you watch any sort of somebody struggled biopic, you know, and they do some interesting stuff. You know, they go to the whole movie focuses on him going to Berlin.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of how he started, and he's running track at school at Ohio State. But it's mainly those Olympics and everyone going, you know, the debate in America of like, is Hitler that bad? You know, like everyone, we hadn't quite figured it. And some people were, and some people. And so you've got Jeremy Irons just doing the classic English actor with the American accent, hard R's. No. And I was like, come on, man.
No, he wasn't playing like a villain taking over.
I was going to say he's not Hitler.
I know, he should have been like, Goebbels. Like, I would have kicked like
Yes. just Irons. From the under race. We all the superior creme.
I would have preferred that.
Yeah.
So.
Well, maybe at some point, is like the agent just went, look, Jeremy, I've got one non creepy role.
In your life. Is he the manager or something? Or?
He's one of these. I'll bring it up on IMDb, but he is one of these actual businessmen who. Hold on. Let me bring this up. He plays. One of the business guys that goes in and helps negotiate the deal between the U.S. because at the time the Olympic Committee was talking about we're not going to Nazi Germany to run in this Olympics. Mm-hmm. So Jeremy Irons
was that the last time they had integrity? Because they're right up there with FIFA as far as
God those
corrupt
two,
organizations.
They should just. You know, BP Oil should just buy them up and just be like, you know, let's just do it. We're going to make some money. But he plays Avery Brundage.
Oh, Avery Brundage, who's the founder of the Olympic Committee, is he not? Or was the head of it at the time.
One of the head guys.
He was still head when we were little.
Yeah.
That's how long he was there.
And so it goes into, you know, Avery kind of had to make this deal with the Germans. Oh. And it. So there's some interesting scenes of sort of the backroom haggling to get this done. And Jesse and some people are like, don't run in the Olympics because, you know, black people are not getting fair rights here. So we need to protest. You know, like he's getting all this from all sides. And he's just like, I just want to run. And that's why I love racing because there's fast and there's slow. There's no color, you know? And so there's some okay scenes like that, but there's just, it's so just some of the dialogue. I'm like, I have heard this in like, in Selma.
Ice Castles.
It's just like...
What's the bowling ball movie? There's a bowling one. From the 80s.
It is one of those where you're just like, you can do it and fight.
Kingpin.
It doesn't end with him running across the finish line or anything in a freeze frame.
Oh, no, it's not that bad. That would have been...
And he didn't go blind and still have to run.
Right?
But it's just, I was watching it going, oh, okay. I mean, the kid who played Jesse Owens is Stephen James. Jason Sudeikis plays his track coach, and he's okay. And then there's you know, this actor, David Cross plays Carl Lutz Long. Now, they focus a lot on those Olympics, and they have Leni Riefenstahl shooting this and showing how Goebbels was telling her how to shoot the movie.
Right.
And what happens is, this is the actual event, so it's not like a spoiler alert, but Lutz loses to Jesse Owens or something, or like embraces him, and they become like friends. And of course, it infuriates the Nazis. And that was a big part of the story and how those two guys were actual friends in real life. So there's some interesting stuff like that because they had to make, I mean, I'm glad they chose. Because those were actual stories that happened that were really interesting. But so much of the storytelling is just so by-the-numbers biopic. Like, I think you just took a biopic program and just plugged in these names.
Right, those beats.
And, like, I mean, I saw some of this in the, I remember in the Johnny Cash one.
Yeah.
Walk the Line. You know, I mean, it was just so, that just kind of standard stuff. So I was like, oh, I get why this was a February release.
Right.
Oh, that's a pity. Well, then are we saying that Olympiad by Leni Riefenstahl is a better movie than Race, even though it's made from the Nazis' point of view because the filmmaking's better?
Yeah. Yes. All those flames, all those people with
her
torches.
Her film is extraordinary visuals.
Well, that was the thing. Like, it was one of those biopics.
Well, it had a point of view.
It did. She's insupportable politically, yeah. But her, filmically, she's obviously got more game than
But I think it was one of those classic biopics where I went, man, would I love to see a really good documentary about this.
Right.
Like, that's what I want to see is the, like, get me the documentary with the hard research that doesn't have the sappy Hollywood dialogue.
I'm betting there's a Bud Greenspan movie. He used to do all those Olympic films. I'm betting there's one of those that's a better one than this.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Maybe there'll be a 30 by 30.
That'd be
certain there might be a 30 by 30.
A 30 by 30 on this.
Because his life post what happened is the tragic part. Because he wasn't able to become a big star, a sports star in the United States, and ended up doing novelties and fairs and running against horses and whatnot.
Yeah.
And it really, and is, it's just terrible.
You should, if that hasn't been done, someone should do a documentary focusing on those Olympics and then after his life, like you just said.
And Jackie Robinson's brother, Mac, was in those Olympics too, and I think might have finished third in that race. And ended up being a janitor out in Pasadena and used to wear his Olympic jacket and whatnot.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. So there's a lot to the story that, you know, obviously a movie can't cover anything. A movie's there to make you feel good about being white and paying $8.
I find that really interesting, actually. That would be interesting to see, like, this rise and then, you know, what happened.
Yeah, after. And they focus on, too.
We saw it with Alan Turing with the Omega Code movie. Jesus, Omega. Wow, I got that completely wrong. The Enigma Code.
The movie about the vitamins. The
yes, Omega exactly.
Don't take them without eating. Movie where there's a zombie.
Yeah, but they showed, you know, what happened to him after, you know, he broke this code and then he basically died penniless and was prosecuted for being gay.
Yeah.
Obviously, that is such a huge event. You could do a whole movie on Leni Riefenstahl. You could do a whole movie on the two Jewish runners and the Olympic team that the Nazis said they can't run.
Yeah.
And they leaned on the coaches and Jesse had to take their place. Like, and so he was running like on behalf of them.
Wow.
That story alone is like, you know.
There's also another cat who won the long jump, who's a black guy who won a gold medal in that Olympic too, whose name escapes me at the moment because I have no memory. But, yeah, I mean, there's 5 million stories. The 36 Olympics are this giant pivotal sporting moment because it's when fascism meets the rest of the world. Jesse Owens is the very emblem of supposedly democracy.
Right.
Except he's treated like shit by America.
Yeah. Except when he's running and winning medals. And it was just sort of like, it was the whole world's insanity and hypocrisy.
And Joe Louis, right? Because Joe Louis beat Schmeling in, 39 or 40?
Yeah.
Who was a German boxer. And that was another giant moment before the war. And then Paige, the three most famous black athletes from then are Satchel Paige, Jesse Owens, and Joe Louis. And only, sadly, Joe Louis and Satchel made any money. And then Joe Louis ended up being a greeter in Vegas, right? Because his life didn't end up so hot.
Yeah, there's so many, I want to
That's 100 different movies that could have been made.
I just pitched you three more. Yeah. Right? This one's called Satchel, Jackie, and Joe. What we're going to do here.
So, I don't know. I mean, it's
They weren't unknown to each other, though, because I know that Jackie Robinson, when he was in the Army in World War II, before he was, played for the Dodgers, he'd wanted to sign up for Officers Candidate School. Well, they weren't going to let black guys do that. And he rang Joe Louis, because Joe Louis was already an enlisted man in the war. And Joe Louis rang some higher-ups he knew that were white guys, and they pulled strings, and they got Jackie into OCS. Oh. So he was a lieutenant in the Army during World War II and a base in Texas. But that required him actually having to petition to get to even go to OCS. They're like, yeah, you're bright and you went to UCLA, but that doesn't count.
Yeah.
The fact that you're a four-letter athlete and highly intelligent and motivated and a great leader of people. We got some fat white guys over here that are really, really nice guys. So, you know, because where did Jesse run in college?
Ohio State.
Yeah, he's from Ohio State. And he had to be the greatest runner in the country by like 1,000 miles.
Well, yeah, that was, and they focused, the first part of the movie focuses a little bit about on his college career and Jason Sudeikis as his coach, who was like, I think he came to Ohio State in like 32 or 33 and was like, you're going to the Olympics and you're going to win gold. Like, this is what you got to do, and worked on his form and his technique. And Jason Sudeikis was a really good, his character was a really good runner at Ohio State and stuff like that. So it focuses a little bit about that and how he was just demolishing records on the collegiate level. And then getting up into the Olympics, the whole second half of the movie is at the Olympics, the 36 Olympics. So the race, actually the movie, it's not the race. It's just race. It's all right. It's not great. It's all right.
All right, next movie, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. This is the Tina Fey Warzone movie.
All right, what did you think of it, Chris?
Okay, I saw this movie. I did not like it. I didn't think it was a good movie. And one of the reasons I didn't like it is it had this weird feel to it of like, this was most likely a dramatic story, and then when Tina Fey got involved, they're like, all right, now we have to funny it up.
Mm-hmm.
So it really felt so
about
uneven.
About those bombs falling.
Yeah. So
the baby scene has got to go.
It was like insane. Like there was like, okay, well this is a scene from 30 Rock. Now this is a Warzone movie.
Oh my
now
God.
It was like these weird mixes of like, okay, now it's now it was almost like Saving Private Benjamin. That's really so. This is this weird mix of like, you know, there's some tense war zone stuff, and then there's some like very flat jokes that just don't work. It's like, oh wait, well now you're supposed to make me feel horrified, and now I'm laughing at quips that Tina Fey is making.
Is she a reporter?
Yeah.
She's a reporter. She's an embedded reporter. And here's the thing
based
about
on a
it,
true
though.
Story.
I will
which
say
Gulf
this.
Which Gulf War is this? The first one or the?
No, it's Afghanistan. Iraq. She's there like 2003 to 06.
Now, I will say this. Tina Fey has a dramatic role in her, for sure. I mean, there's definitely, you could see a lot of really cool, like, almost like roots of that in this movie, but I feel like she's not where she needs to be, and this movie is not a good vehicle for her to show off those dramatic acting chops. So I think she the acting is it's okay. No one really knows what to do. Like, you could see like, well, should I be funny here or should I be serious? Like, it had that feel of like no one really knew what to do scene to scene. So, and I could see kind of, well, it's another February, March-ish release. Okay. March release. And I felt like this was kind of like if in more capable hands, this could have been either an interesting satire or a nice dramatic role for Tina. I felt like the movie went in two different directions and didn't know where it wanted to go.
Do you think she was attached to it after it got going?
That's really what it felt like. It felt like it was like this dramatic film and then it got kind of
because if it was Jessica Chastain, it's a serious movie.
Right. Right.
Because she's already proven she can handle torture. Yeah. And
well, here's the thing. I had a very different response.
Yeah.
I actually really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. Now, here's why. Now, granted,
mean kernels.
Yes, you nailed it. I just have a completely different take on it, and not that just because I've been to Afghanistan doesn't mean like. Well, I know, it's not that at all. I guess it just resonated a lot with me because that to me, and I was worried that from watching the trailer that I was going to have the reaction you had, which is, they're like, joinkies, IEDs, like it was going to be too funny. But I thought...
Cool at the Taliban.
Yeah. But I actually thought that there was a decent balance, and here's why. Now, I have not been... It's based on the book, The Taliban Shuffle, Strange Days in Afghanistan and Pakistan by Kim Barker. So to me, why it sort of resonated is going over there is insane. And people that choose to go over there are a little crazy. I remember talking to Scott Kennedy, who was going over there once a month.
Yeah.
He did 50 some tours.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'd been over there like, I don't know, 5 or 6 times. I went over there with him 3 times. And I remember he was like, oh, Graham, he was getting the hang of it. He was like, anyone who comes over here is like running from something. They got some crazy shit back in the States and they like come over here. So that whole vibe that they were of all these embed reporters who are all nuts, and also how she gets the gig. They're in that room at the station and they're like, all you guys, none of you have kids. So you're the ones we're going to ask to do this. And so like the craziness of it
Because they get killed over there too.
Oh yeah, oh, they
get better reporters. For absolutely. Sure.
And a big part of the that I know this from an article that I read. A big part of the book, which I think was in the movie, and I thought it was done well, is the addiction to adrenaline. And they talk a lot about that. And like, and I've heard a lot of embed reporters and stuff. You want to get into it. I mean, you want to, and I can't. I mean, the times I've gone over there, it's awesome and it's rewarding, as I've talked about. And but there is an adrenaline rush. I'm not going to lie to you. That's part of going over there. Is I'm flying, you know, and I'm watching this movie. They're flying around in Ospreys and helicopters, and there's gunfire. And I've gone through some of that shit, and it's a crazy charge. And I think it attracts sort of a crazy person a little bit. And to me, I thought it was a good balance between the serious scenes and the jokey scenes because, again, like. I remember going over there and just, we would fucking laugh harder than I've ever laughed. And then the very next moment would be like in tears because some soldier would come up and go and tell their story or, you know, we'd go into the hospital and we'd meet wounded soldiers and you'd just be like gut wrenching tears. And then someone would crack a joke cause it's a bunch of comedians and the whole situation. It's so crazy. Afghanistan is a crazy country. It's crazier than Iraq. And the history of it and what's going on and then what we were doing there. So that, I don't know, it kind of worked for me. But again.
How do you feel about Alfred Molina playing an Afghan leader?
I didn't mind it.
Was he Karzai?
No, he wasn't Karzai. That would be awesome, though.
I thought Ben Kingsley was
Ben Kingsley.
That would have made sense.
I don't know. I didn't have a problem with it. But then maybe I'm so...
It was ridiculous. He was playing a sketch character.
Oh. Is it supposed to be What the Fuck, the Whiskey Tango Foxtrot thing? WTF?
Oh, that could be it. I don't know.
Those are the letters, right?
Yeah, Whiskey I think that is.
WTF.
What the Fuck, because that is sort of what happens over there. Yeah. And the things that sort of resonated with me, too, and maybe that's why I just sort of overlooked all these other things that I...
The obvious flaws
in the movie, which is like, she talks about this towards, she's there... from I think we said like 03 to 06 and by the end of it there's like it's Afghanistan, no one wants to talk about it because everyone's talking about Iraq. And I remember being in Afghanistan in 06 and talking to soldiers who were like, one guy, we were at this small base, me and Shamatash in Jalalabad, and we were in this mess hall and we were talking to this guy and he was down from a real small fire base that was getting contact every day. And one of his guys got hit, so he had to come down with his guy to the bigger base. And at the time in 06, Iraq was getting all the news. And this guy said, fuck Iraq, man. I'm taking fucking fire every goddamn day. Yeah. Like, there's a fucking war here. Right. Mm-hmm. And I heard all that stuff in the movie. I heard an Air Force officer say, oh, man, we could be getting so much more done here, but we diverted all the resources to Iraq.
Right.
You know, and so...
No oil in Afghanistan. Dick Cheney was a little more interested in other things.
There's just minerals for cell phones, but, you know...
And a pipeline that can go from Russia to the...
There's a lot of poppies.
Yeah. Oh, and heroin, of course. Of course, to be sure. Heroin.
So it sort of... I guess I forgave some of those flaws. But I don't know. I'm curious to know, since you and I split on it so much, what anyone else out there who sees the movie, what you guys think of it, and email us.
Yeah, definitely let us know.
Provided it's a short email and doesn't accuse me of being an asshole.
All right, well then we're not going to get any.
I was going to say, wow. Really limited here. If I have to work in those parameters.
Yeah, let's forget it. People are going to throw away their computers.
It's discipline, it's a discipline. And I have to keep this short and not be derogatory. No.
You of all people, Greg. You, come on. Come on.
And Greg, what Graham is saying is stop emailing him.
Really. I don't want to do this typically on air, but...
Minor signed Robespierre.
So, I mean... I did like seeing Tina Fey be serious.
Yeah.
Do some serious stuff. I liked watching.
Do you know where they shot it by any chance?
New Mexico.
Ah. I was going to say they had to find a mountainy, deserty looking area.
They fly around and
that looks war torn.
That looks war torn. Albuquerque.
I was going to say New Mexico.
It's tough, especially Santa Fe.
I took a green pepper the other day.
I saw some quartz jewelry. Yeah. And I just.
Next to you had a flashback.
Next to a jackalope. And. The Jackalope Indian Dreamcatcher. But so go watch this, guys, and see who are you with. Team hashtag Team Chris or hashtag Team
Are there Graham. Any other comics in it, or is she just
It's multi. It's Margot Robbie. It's okay. It's
Billy Bob Thornton plays a curmudgeon-y funny general.
Yeah.
Get out of my office.
Yeah. Yeah. There's some of that. There's a little bit of
be
that.
Be careful out there.
Yeah. Yeah, you just did it. And Martin Freeman.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he plays a nice Scottish boozy reporter.
He's always fun to watch.
He's always fun to watch. He's always interesting, fun to watch, because he's one of these guys who's like, you know, you want to sleep with me, you know, like that. One of those guys. Mm-hmm. He's still adorable. All right. So Zootopia.
Yes,
Chris.
I saw Zootopia with the family over the weekend, and I have to say it was a good movie. It was enjoyable. It was interesting the way they played around with it.
I think your view is shaded because you've lived in a cartoon zoo.
Well, that is true. Yeah, and I had a couple flashbacks to, like, you know, a train going through a rainforest. But this was an interesting movie. It was interesting timely-wise, too, because a lot of it was about race and the way you're treated based on your perceptions of the different animals. Oh. You know, if you're a predator or prey. And I was like, you know, we prey, we're 80% here. You know, why are we dealing with the predators at all? They could go feral at any moment. You know, it was a lot of interesting things. But what I loved about it was that it played around with the political correctness. Mm-hmm. Like when the rabbit is like the first police officer, the first rabbit police officer in Zootopia. And when she goes to the clerk goes, oh, you are so cute. And she goes... you know, it's okay if rabbits, we call each other cute, but when someone else says it, it's kind of offensive. Yeah. So it has some really cool stuff in there.
Is it a sequel?
It's not. No, it's a new property. But so
in Madagascar, I guess.
It really, yeah. Yeah, there's about 100 of those. Yeah. So
it's one with parrots, I keep seeing planes.
Most likely, it's doing very well. I wouldn't be surprised if there was actually a sequel to it. Jason Bateman does a fine job in this as the fox that no one trusts. And what I really liked about it, too...
I object to foxes being cast that way at this late date.
Yeah.
Why are they always untrustworthy?
And that's really...
What are they, wolves?
Yeah. But it goes into all that, too. It's like, you know, as they were... You know, these animals were bullied as kids. And then it reflects like the worldview of how they're perceived as adults. So it gets into some really metaphorical stuff for race and perception, which it went deeper than I thought it would, which was interesting.
So then how did your kids kind of pick up on these?
I don't think they picked up on all of it, especially like kind of the jokes about political correctness, but they definitely got the stuff about like intolerance. They got the broader message, which for sure. But
I'm hoping the message was we're all brothers and sisters.
Yeah. Yes,
and not, by the way, the zebras are superior.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
Wouldn't that be awesome? That would be
at the end,
lions win.
Yeah. You know, the predators and prey.
Lions only.
Yeah.
You're drinking troughs down there. Yeah.
Shouldn't have been born weak.
Yeah.
I guess.
What are you going to do? You're too small.
How's that my fault?
Yeah. 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 But stuff like,
my fault I'm dominant?
Yeah.
You know, I don't think so.
And they give her like parking duty. And she's like, hey, I'm not just some token bunny. You know, like they do stuff like that. And what I like, too, is it did a lot of cool, fun stuff with the animation and, like, the environments. Like, Zootopia is, like, split up into sections. Like, there's a train that goes through. There's, like, the rainforest where all the rainforest animals live. There's the desert. And the police at the police academy have to train for all these different environments. So they had all these weird obstacle courses they had to go through. And so it was really interesting. Where it fell flat a little bit is when it had some interesting and smart and insightful jokes. When it fell back on the obvious jokes, that's where I'm like, oh, you know, guys, you don't need to do that.
Right.
It's like, you know, the animal that's the godfather. You know, he's got, you know, the polar bears as the bodyguards, and, you know, but he's real tiny and he just talks exactly like, you know, Don Corleone. You don't have to do that. We're already seeing more interesting things here. So...
Could have been worse. Could have been all Star Wars jokes.
Yeah.
That's the new Godfather.
Yeah.
Just all Ren... Yep. Jokes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and especially since it's Disney, you know, they know they're going to cross-pollinate through all the different brands to re-promote the next movie. But I thought they did a really good job. It was animated really well. I'll tell you, it's Disney, you know, buying Pixar was really smart, because now that John Lasseter is kind of in charge of all the animation, there's those Pixar touches now, and even the ones that aren't Pixar movies. And this one definitely had a lot of that. But, you know, it doesn't, it didn't really let you off the hook as far as like, even like the adult viewers. I'm like, no, this is really what's going on, and this kind of reflects what's happening, and this, whether it's animals or people, it's, you know, we have still have a lot of work to do. So it was a really fun movie, and it balanced it. It wasn't heavy handed where like, all right, I got it, the message, you know, but because it was also fun and frenetic and just really visually beautiful to look at.
That's cool.
So it was,
did you see it in 3D or 2D?
We didn't see it in 3D. We saw it in 2D, and some of the environments and stuff, like, I think would be really cool in 3D, but I just get so bored with 3D unless it's done really well.
Right.
So I was fine in 2D.
Also, wearing glasses. Well, I guess they give you the big goggles now, so.
Right.
In the old days, the cardboard ones were like, this is a drag. When you wear glasses, it's like.
And they haven't gotten it right where, even like when you wear the glasses, sometimes then it makes the film too dark, too.
Right.
So
yeah, that's my biggest complaint, is that I feel like I feel like I'm in a bubble, or I'm wearing a hood or something. Mm-hmm. It takes away from the film.
So so it was good. I enjoyed it. It was a good family film. It was one of those good family movies where as an adult, you're not going to be bored out of your minds. There's stuff for you too. All right. So
now, Greg, this is a movie that we have talked about. We wanted to get your point of view on it, is the Nina Simone documentary. That was the one on Netflix, right? What happened, Miss Simone?
I saw it. We watched it at home, and I think her daughter was one of the producers on it, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. And I thought it had a lot of groovy footage that you didn't get to see of Nina Simone. But I thought at the end of the day, they kind of turn her into this tragic figure. And I mean, to be sure, she's probably bipolar and has a lot of alcohol issues and things like that. And certainly the men in her life might not have always been the best thing for her. But at the end of the day, I always feel like, not that I always want a hagiography, not that I always want everyone canonized in a documentary. Yes, you have to show their human side and all that jazz. But she's kind of a genius, and she almost stands alone, like, as an artist. She's almost her own genre of music, because she's a classically trained artist who did jazz, and her most famous song, Mississippi Goddamn, is like a Broadway show tune. And that's her most famous protest song, and she wrote it after all the shit went down in Mississippi in 1963. And if you hear her singing, she goes, this is a song, this is a show tune for a show that ain't been written yet. And then plays it, because it's a real bouncy little Broadway number all about lynching and murder and, you know, and that's how profound she is as an artist. And so I felt like it kind of gave her, while you got to see the revealing parts of her breakdown, and there's definitely scenes where she's playing on stage and she's kind of losing her shit a little in France and whatnot, and she had to move to Europe. At the same time, I was kind of angry, only because I love her so much and think, Why you wanna fuck with Nina Simone? She can't defend herself now. Now, mind you, this is someone who, when her neighbors in France made too much noise, she took out a gun and fired at them. Okay, and
and she was kind of abusive to her daughter.
She's crazy. There's no question about it. And I mean, I saw her right before she passed, maybe 6 months at the Wiltern with my wife, and she came on with a lion's tail whisk that someone had given her in Africa on a previous trip. She was wearing at this point she was a little chunkier and was wearing a turban and had this whisk. And she goes, I went to Africa and this is what the queens carry there and what. And she'd raise it in the air and everyone would applaud. And she carried on doing it through the whole concert. Anytime she wanted a hand, she'd go like this and hold up the whisk and everyone would cheer, right? And on top of that, there was two or three guys on stage,
dressed like lions.
Right? There was a guy in a white suit and a guy in a turquoise suit, and they were clearly strapped. Like, they had guns on stage. And you were like, so as far as gangster act goes, you can talk about all the rap groups you like, but Nina Simone was the fucking real deal. You know, there were like firearms at the Wiltern for a group of middle-aged jazz fans. You know, it was like my wife goes, does that guy have a gun? And I'm like, I think so, yeah. Like, you know, they're in suits and they're standing on stage like this. Like, what are you doing up there? Your security, you know? And then, of course, she always played the thing that Miles Davis always played, which was that, you know, there's a famous story of her when she first was at school and they wouldn't let her play because she's black. And, you know, she had to argue her way through Juilliard and all that jazz. And obviously she had to deal with way more than we can ever imagine. But she always played the white people are devils things. And then her bass player who she'd been in the band with for maybe 35, 40 years was a Jewish guy, of course.
Yeah.
So like Miles Davis always said white people were the devil and everything, and yet he worked with Gil Evans, he worked with Bill Evans. I mean, you can say it all you like, but I always think of what Thelonious Monk said. They always tried to get me to hate white people, but then someone would come along and mess it up. So I don't know that it's a... All documentaries have a point of view, and they're not objective. There's no such thing as objectivity. As soon as a camera's turned on, all objectivity is removed from a room. If we were sitting here and there was a camera on us, we wouldn't be acting the way we are now. We would be acting different.
And even if there was the other point, too, is even if there was a hidden camera, the director will then
pick
what they want to use in the ed bay. So like,
exactly.
So even if you're going through archival footage or whatever, there is, you can try to be as objective as you can, but there's a subjectivity to every single thing.
Well, the title of the movie is Whatever Happened. So obviously we're looking at someone who we've placed at one point and then we feel that they have slid because of whatever reasons, their mental illness or the alcohol or the abuse, whatever. Was she a warm, wonderful human being? She probably had that capacity. Was she on a daily basis? That's impossible for me to say, but no, probably if you were around. My wife always tells me a famous story that Eric Burdon and her are playing some blues festival, right? Eric Burdon from the Animals. And she comes up to Eric Burdon and goes, so, about this one song you do, you know that's an old spiritual this, that, right? Like it's a root song. And he goes, what about the song you do that's a Chain Gang song that you never give him credit for? And she goes, let's have a drink. He calls her right back on it, right? She's coming up to call him on, you know, misappropriation of black culture. And she's like, oh, he's like,
Right.
And you. And I love that her answer is, let's have a drink.
Yeah.
And they have a drink. And it's like, so I think she's a great artist. And I think that the biopic has been controversial for whatever reasons. Zaldana's not black enough. Her nose isn't big enough, whatever.
Oh, the new one that's coming out was Zoe Saldana.
I'd like to see it anyway because I'm a sucker for biopics, you know, like.
Yeah.
But what I hate in biopics is the first scene is you chasing butterflies when you're a child. And then the second scene is someone gives you a piano. And the third scene is a white person's angry at you, and then the fourth scene is you're in concert at Carnegie Hall.
Well, that was Race.
That was exactly Race.
Right, Race was that movie, right? Like, oh my God, my brother died, and then you're going to school, and then 2 days later, no crying from you.
No, but the movie Race, too, the Jesse Owens, it's the same thing. They all do that. Yes.
3 days later, there's a moment of triumph. That what I hate in all those movies is the epiphany moment. Like in the movie Ray, which was beautifully acted by Jamie Foxx, Taylor Hackford, you know, it was clunked along at parts. It was a bit 50s.
Yeah.
But there was a scene where he's like, I want to do a country album. They're like, a country album? And like in the Johnny Cash movie, remember, he goes, I want to do this. And they're like, Johnny, you can't do that.
Right.
You'll endanger the financial stability of the record company.
Sinatra doesn't get his masters.
Yeah.
Right.
If you want to do a show at Folsom Prison, that's always a...
What the heck?
Because that's that scene, and they know everyone in the audience is going to go, oh, actually, this is this was the breakout. This is what
Also, Joaquin Phoenix was not my choice for Johnny Cash, but when I saw the movie, I saw it on a plane, right? Walked the line, and I didn't even think Reese Witherspoon was bad, and I thought she did a good job as Jean Carter, but the flight attendant gets up and announced it at the beginning. You know, I don't know when the movie came out.
Oh, four.
Ten years ago. Yeah. She goes, today's motion picture on the flight is a wonderful film. Well, I think it's a wonderful film, and it's called Walk the Line. So, of course, I watch it. There's nothing else to do. I'm on a plane coming back from Chicago or whatever. And I liked it, but I didn't think it was wonderful, wasn't the word. And I wanted to go up to the flight attendant at the end of the flight and go, I didn't think it was wonderful. I thought your characterization was inapt and inaccurate. I would have said it was a workmanlike project that had moments lacking inspiration and highly predictable. For me, wonderful would have been like if you saw Johnny do a rail of meth and then set his forest on fire behind his house, which he did, right, when he lived up in Ojai. And then the feds were called in because it was a condor preserve, right? And he ended up wiping out half the habitat for the California condor. Like, he did some shit that was like, he was an insane drug addict, right? Like, I want to see him and Waylon doing fucking rails and shots, you know, like, and shooting at road signs. Like, that part of the movie's not in there, you know, like, we're being, what was that one from the 80s?
What if they actually shot that scene? Right. And like, we got to cut this on the editing. But there's actually like the, him destroying the Condor Preserve.
The
him crying after, all just jinked out on meth.
The cash estate was like, nah.
No. Well, Johnny signed off on it, right? And then June died. I think he lived to see, I don't know if he lived to see it. He might have lived to see it because June died right before him and everything. No, they signed off on it. So they wanted it to be this, you know, hagiography or whatever. Yeah. But for me, it was mostly Joaquin. Johnny Cash was a badass dude. Like the hair and the attitude.
Tall.
Yeah, he was formidable.
Yeah.
And Joaquin's, you know, smaller and not, I mean, like, I need a big rockabilly dude. I mean, dye Josh Homme's hair and have him sing low or something. Like, let's do this.
Yeah.
Get a real musician. Like, Jamie Foxx can sing and play.
Right.
Like, they didn't let him sing the part in the movie, but I did a Jamie Foxx show once, and in between takes, Jamie Foxx would walk over to the grand piano and sing and play. And he can sing and play as good as he wants. Like, the dude is, like, extraordinarily talented. Yeah. And you think, well, I understand why he played it. Even though he wasn't as tall as Ray Charles or whatever, he could fucking sit down and make it look like he was doing it. Mm-hmm. Where at no point did I think Joaquin was a country star.
No.
Nice.
I thought he was a nice guy who goes to the Whole Foods in my neighborhood. You know, I see him checking the cell by date. And
Who's more believable as a country star, Joaquin Phoenix or Gwyneth Paltrow?
Oh, I love that movie so much. Oh, my God, I love that movie. I watched it. I have a thing about Gwyneth Paltrow. Like, I just think she's a terrible actor or whatever. But playing that role, my favorite was an interview I read with her. She said, you know, because she plays a drug addict country singer, right? Who's on the, she's in her middle-aged, and then there's the younger girl who's taken over. It's the oldest. It's like a fucking Busby Berkeley musical. You know what I mean? Like, you're getting a little old for this business, aren't you? Well, oh, look here, Dolly. She's new and fresh and clean and young and... You know, it's one of those fucking...
It's like,
gee willikers, you know, Hackersaurus Rex. And I think horribly it was called Country Strong.
Yes,
Country Strong.
Yeah.
She goes, I didn't know about like how you should play a drug addict alcoholic. So I called Robert Downey and said, what's it like? you ass. If someone called you and said that, you'd be like, fuck you. Yeah. That's what it's like. Fuck you. Does that describe it to you?
Well, she didn't add to the story that he hung up on her. Yeah.
I mean, wow. Like, you called your famous drug addict friend and went like, what's it like to be a drug addict? Well, you're high a lot. Yeah. And then when you're not high, you're kind of looking for drugs.
Yeah.
And you get your work done, but there's, like, big periods where you don't really know what's happening.
But it's okay because you're still rich.
Well, you're rich. Yeah. You know, like, the scenes where she was supposed to be wasted and shit, she was the most inauthentic wasted person in the history of wasted. Like, there's great movies with drugs in them, like Drugstore Cowboy or Pulp Fiction or whatever, where people take drugs and carry on.
Right.
They keep going. They talk. They have intellectual conversations. They smoke. They eat. They fucking live their life. They don't just sit there and go, man, I'm really high. Because that's not how drug addicts act. We're comedians. There's lots of people on drugs around us. They do not act that way. They get up and do their set. Sometimes they kill. Like, you know what I mean? Sometimes they're the producer of what you're doing. Like, there's a lot of different types of drug addiction. Whereas movies like to run for that, I'm scratching my arm and sniffing a lot, and I can't quite articulate, which is... not the way most drug addicts really act. They don't slouch around.
No.
They fucking get up in your face and fucking...
say crazy shit and...
They certainly are able to be in bands and be performers all the time. That carries on. That's not over. And that movie. Tim McGraw, I thought, was the surprise in it. I thought, oh my God, you can act a little. You're low key. You didn't... Mm-hmm. She's like laying on the couch with her head thrown back to indicate I'm fucked up. And you're like...
Visual clues, Greg. Oh, visual clues.
It was like a high school play.
It kind of was. And like, you know, Johnny Cash was on drugs for pretty much his whole career. And so was Waylon Jennings. And they still made 5 million records. They still Lemmy, who just passed.
Yes.
Lemmy took meth, I think, up until they gave him the defibrillator. And even then, he probably still took some. He made 100 albums. He did 1,000 tours. And while he was dying, did another tour. And so if that's what being a drug addict is, right on. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to see drug addicts diminish because they're drug addicts. I'd rather see the straight people who are assholes diminish for being assholes. Like, You know what I mean? No one wants to see the Debbie Boone story. You know, no one wants to see, like, the who was that one from the 80s? Amy Grant. No one wants to see the Amy Grant story or the Striper documentary. We want to see Motley Crue set fire to the bus, drive off the road, you know.
Would kind of want to see the Striper documentary.
I would like to see the Striper. Only those tights they wore.
In the, right, in the capable hands.
In the capable hands. Yeah.
If the Coen brothers made a Striper biopic,
now
I would be there.
Now you're talking. Well, what mostly I resented, though, was that Gwyneth thought she was going to have a country career off the back of it. And she really was angling for that. Because, as you know, the Kid Rock model or whatever country singer you can think of, the Hootie model. Right. When you're done in one genre of music, country always takes you.
Yeah.
Country's the last redoubt.
Right.
We don't have that much taste. You know, whatever the problem is, whatever their thing is, you like, you know what? Now I'll do country. Like, what's his name? Darius basically stopped being a pop star from Hootie and the Blowfish and is a country star.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, we like him. Yeah. And Kid Rock stopped doing whatever crappy hip hop, whatever the fuck that was, he was doing, and now he's a country star.
Yeah.
So they'll always take you. And they love a second act. They're the one genre that, like, oh, I blew my brains out with coke and booze and shit, but I found Jesus. Come on, Dad.
Yeah.
Come on. Yeah. We all did.
Now make songs about your truck.
Yeah. I got a restraining order too, man.
Oh, man. I'm going to fucking become a country singer. Yeah,
it's, like, you know, it's round two of a career.
All right.
It is, right? That's the second or third act. You go, fuck it. I'll be a country comic.
All right.
Country. You tone down the funny. You don't have to include everyone anymore. Don't write in if you're a country comic.
So, oh, we have a an ad read.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, let's do it. Squarespace. You know what? One of the things we do, we do have ad copy here, but we always say with Squarespace too, it's a company that not only supports podcasting, it supports podcasters, it supports the festival. So, it's a good company to give your business to and support. And we're not going to make you pay full price. Seriously.
No.
Yeah, 10% off.
Well, how do you do that, Chris?
Do a coupon code ComedyFilmNerds.
So I just go to squarespace.com and I enter the offer code ComedyFilmNerds and I get 10% off?
Your first purchase.
What?
It's amazing. And it's a free trial. And here's the thing about it, too. There's no coding required. It doesn't matter your skill level. And it's a lot of easy-to-use tools. And you can get a free domain if you sign up for a year.
Yeah, and the thing about Squarespace, I've used it. I'm not a tech guy. It's very good at help. If you just want...
Earbuds is a Squarespace site?
Yes. You sign up. You use the templates. It's really easy to use. And you get to save 10% with coupon code ComedyFilmNerds.
So you've got stuff you want to show the world?
Yeah. You've got some weird...
Do it.
Put your weird nonsense up on the internet.
Yeah.
That's where it's meant to be.
For 10% off.
Yeah, for 10% off. Yeah. It's discount weird nonsense.
No one gets canceled on the internet.
Nope. Nope. You can't get canceled on the internet. Mm-hmm. You can't have a bad, fucking marketing. Why am I forgetting words that are already existing?
You don't have a bad quarter.
Yeah. That's true.
Look, we've been reviewing you guys, and Comedy Film Nerds just isn't producing again. Somebody, how did this get made? Is kicking you guys out.
Which those cocksuckers are.
Yeah.
No, focus group. That's what I wanted to say. Yeah. Wow, the focus groups, they didn't like. Yeah.
We're cutting your website funding.
It should be smartest person in this area.
Right, smartest man in the world. Don't you think, one, you're taking advantage of your male privilege? Two, while people listen to my show, they have a toggle in their hand and they can see if they approve or disapprove of every moment of the show. So that's how I try to get my readings, sort of CNN's town hall style. Very, very hot with the Filipino under fives.
What is that?
I don't know.
Is that a real Democrat?
No, I just made
that up. That's so great. The Filipino under fives. Yeah. Right.
It sounds like it's pitchable for a product.
I love when somebody just makes up some fucking term and then no one has the stones to go, what the fuck is a Filipino? Everyone goes, oh, yeah. Oh, the under fives, right. Yeah, we've been trying to get them forever.
Huge with those. Need those. Yeah. Especially in the Southeast.
It's good with the Texan overcarriage.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There. No, oh, gotta have that. No, yeah.
We just got the data on that. Yeah, it's looking good. So
numbers are looking good. Strong, super strong this quarter. Emerging.
So Greg, we want to talk to you about you're involved with the Turner Classic Movie Festival this
year. Well, I have been. We'll see if they give me another slot this year. There's been a lot of hoo-ha and hickety-boop. But last year, I was able to show a picture there. We did the Greg Proops Film Club there. And at the Egyptian, which is that lovely theater on Sunset. And there's four or five theaters there. And they let me show Adam's Rib, which my wife picked, which is a...
That's on Hollywood.
Yeah.
Not Sunset. Mm-hmm. Hollywood.
Oh, right? It's on Hollywood. Sorry.
That's right.
Yeah, you're right. The Egyptian on Hollywood. Forgive me. It's near the El Capitan and all that, where all the big movie theaters are. Mm-hmm. But the Egyptian is the one they redid. It was a 20s place, and it's got the big, you know, obelisk out front. And
well, because the Freemasons own it.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and they designed our dollar.
Yeah.
And there's a great parking
lot. How are you with the Freemasons under five? Are we going to
We're killing. But only mostly the Austrian Freemasons. We're losing a lot of the Czech Republic ones, and we're bleeding in the Balkans. I mean, you know, we got
to... We're bleeding in the Balkans.
Triage in the Balkans.
Hashtag bleeding in the Balkans.
So, but they're really fun, and I've worked with them off and on for the last couple of years. I met Scott McGee, who... I was doing a gig in Atlanta a couple of years ago, and he had been listening to my film club, and he did a podcast about film, and... The book that he quoted from when I went in to do his podcast was Comedy Film.
Oh, yes. Nice.
Movies, just to bring everything back around. So he took out the book and he starts reading me my chapter about film noir. And I was like, there's nothing more awful than being held to account, right, of something that you've read and an opinion you put forth. And he's like, well, why is that? And I'm like, oh, golly, I just did it because I love Graham and Chris, you know. It wasn't for money. So I had to defend my position, which was awesome. And then we became mates. And then I went to one just to hang. And they have all the great all-time stars that are left alive. They really do make an effort to go out and get them. There's a few that won't do it. Like they're never going to get, I don't think, Sean Connery or...
There's
a couple. Harrison Ford might be iffy. But last year I saw Shirley MacLaine give us a talk and her picture... Peter Fonda, Sophia Loren for 2 hours.
Oh, wow.
Sophia Loren for 2 hours. And then she came and hosted one of her pictures. And Julie Andrews and Christopher Plummer, and they spoke, and then they showed the 50th anniversary of Sound of Music in complete Cinerama. Cool. So, like, these are the kind of events, like, you really do get to see. I stood on the red carpet with Kim Novak and talked to her, and she was super smoking hot, and she's 80 years old. And then we went to Musso's to get dinner right after, and she came in with a retinue of people. And because Musso's is so old school, it was like it was 1959 when Kim Novak walked in. Everybody... Like, you could hear, you know, forks dropping. The whole fucking place turned and was like, Kim Novak. And she's tall, right? Mm. And she swanned in, and everybody's like, I like that. You know what I mean? So you get that bitching old movie feel. And I've seen, I met Paul Apprentice and Richard Benjamin, cinematographers, because they have not only, you know, Quincy Jones gave a speech, Thelma Schoonmaker, who does all of Scorsese's movies. We saw her speak, and we had to fucking split from that to go see another person speak. So it's a wild melee of 5 days. Oh, Richard Dreyfuss was there last year and showed a picture and apparently cried during his talk. I didn't get to see that.
Was he crying about Krippendorf Drive?
Well, yeah, I was going to say. Thank you for saying that. No,
it was a sprint for that joke. The minute you said that,
he's emotionally unstable somehow. And I saw Max von Sydow speak there, and we've seen a lot of great stars and a lot of great pictures. God, they showed The Seventh Seal, and Max von Sydow was there. They showed Joan Crawford. I learned racing the hard way. Mildred Pierce, and Anne Blythe was there, who plays the slutty teenage daughter in Mildred Pierce, and she's 75 years old now. She was 17 when she was in the movie. It's from 1945, and so she gets up and talks about the picture, and then they show the picture. Saw a Great Gatsby made by Alan Ladd during World War II that no one's ever seen for legal reasons. Like, it's never been on TV. I've seen the other two Great Gatsbys, right? The crappy Robert Redford one and the crappy Baz Luhrmann one.
Right.
Which are crappy. They're okay. There's moments. The Baz Luhrmann one, whatever. I didn't get that at all. But
that was a lot of money in reflective glass.
Oh, my God. And, I mean, Great Gatsby, like, if you've ever read it, it's brilliant. Like, it's a brilliant novel. It's evocative. Right. It's moody. It's tragic. It's got everything in it. Greed and venality and sex and money and... You don't really have to jazz it up.
I know.
I don't need Jay-Z and shit flying through the air to make me interested in this story. It's a story of American wealth and corruption and, you know, golly, the great American novel. So the Redford one's torpid. The Baz Luhrmann one's over the top. This one really hit it. It's black and white. They added extra scenes, which I love, that aren't in the novel. Like, he's in World War I and he's a doughboy. And then you see his evolving to come to New York. And so there's all, like, the first 10 minutes are like shit that Fitzgerald didn't write. That's stuck on.
Oh, cool.
And Alan Ladd's son was there. And Alan Ladd's son goes, my father loved this picture and he really wanted it to be a hit. And it wasn't. It came out, it came and came, it went. It wasn't a big deal. His big movies are like This Gun for Hire and all the hard bitten stuff, you know? Yeah. You know, because Alan Ladd delivers his lines like this, right? He's got that 1920s delivery. He's perfect as Gatsby. He's small. He's good looking. Yeah. He's there's something wrong. You know, he's hiding something.
Did they go into like why the legal reasons that it wasn't released?
As soon as TV came out, they wanted to show it on TV, and the studio, no, we're not having that. And so it's just been caught in like a Twilight Zone for 50 fucking years.
Wow, weird.
But they showed it, and you know, there wasn't that many people there, maybe 100 people to see it. And I was like, I'm one of the like 12 people that's ever seen this version of Gatsby that's like a totally worthy version that should be shown on TV. Like TCM should be showing it, but they don't, I don't think, have the rights to show it. They got to show it. This year, the first picture is going to be Carl Dreyer's St. Joan, the Joan of Arc silent movie that Dreyer made. And Dreyer's a fantastic silent director with an orchestra. So that's like their big centerpiece the first night. Last year, it was Sound of Music. And to see Julie Andrews and Christopher Plummer get up there, and Julie Andrews goes, we're shooting the picture, and I can't remember who the cinematographer was, a Brit, I think. And, of course, they shot on location in Austria, you know, and Robert Wise and the whole. And it had been a Broadway show, and they'd adapted it and moved some of the songs around and all that. And so they bring in – and Theodore Bacall played on Broadway, but they wanted Christopher Plummer because he's hot, right? Mm-hmm. And so – and, you know, it's the 60s, so he's with the blonde hair. What's going on in this house? You know, super mean and wooden, you know. She goes, we've been doing it, and we're watching The Rushes one day, and the cinematographer says to me, she goes, well, how's it going? And he goes, Julie, you've got this thing on the end of your nose, and you should really have it fixed. She goes, I've been watching The Rushes, and I got a lot of close-ups of you, and you've got this bulb right there. And so the guy who's interviewing her goes, did you have it fixed? And she went, no. This is like her first giant, you know, she had done Mary Poppins, right?
Right.
And beat Audrey Hepburn for the fucking Oscar because Audrey Hepburn got My Fair Lady, which was her role. Right. She had done it on the West End and Broadway. So her revenge was that Mary Poppins was bigger than fucking Christ. Mm-hmm. And she got an Oscar for it. And then the next picture, Sound of Music, which... I don't know. Is it the most popular movie of all time?
Yeah.
You could argue. It might not have made the most money. In adjusted dollars, it might be up there. I mean, there's sing-along Sound of Music. There's people. The towns in Austria where they shot it are tourist places because of the movie. Like, and then she said, the rivers you see in the movie, we made them. Like, there's scenes where there's streams and shit. Where, like, the kids are jumping over the stream and singing. And she's like, no, they dug them out. They put blue shit underneath and they fucking.
It's hilarious.
You know, just like, okay, you know. We'll fix it. So you get to see those kind of things and find out a little bit more. Peter Fonda talked about his dad and said, you know, his dad was never close with him, not that warm. Mm-hmm. That one time they get drunk together and the dad said, sit down and like gave him a tequila. And of course, at this point, Peter Fonda's already a star and a producer and a director and a, you know, like he'd made Easy Rider. And so it's pretty wild what they get into. And of course, now they're old. So they're more sentimental and things from a million years ago, they remember distinctly. Wow. You know, the trick of memory, right? Like, if I ask you about something that happened 40 years ago, you're like, oh, I remember that. If I ask you about yesterday, you're like, I don't actually remember.
It all blends together.
The clarity of time, which is, I think, the... we were at a party a couple years ago, and they had Lulu get up and sing To Sir With Love at the party, right? And Max Mancino was there with his family. He's got this gorgeous French wife, right? Who's probably in her 70s, you know?
Yeah.
And Max Mancino's sitting there. And Lulu starts to get up and sing To Sir With Love. And Max Mancino looks up like this. You know, like, ugh. Jennifer's like, look at fucking Max Mancino.
Like an annoyed look on his face.
Like, oh, God, really? You know? And then they asked him, Leonard Maltin interviewed him, and he said, after you played Jesus in Greatest Story Ever Told, what was it like for you in Hollywood? And he goes, all they wanted me to do was play Jesus and the Pope. He goes, casting directors are not very imaginative.
Wow. I think if I were to meet Max Mancino, I would like be scared.
Right?
Because he's... fucking Max Mancino.
Well, if you watch Seventh Seal, I put this in the book too. It looks like, God, he looks like he's 50 in that movie. He's like 20 something.
Was he 29?
Yeah, he was.
Oh, and of course, he was critical of it. Like, they showed it, and it's such a superb movie. And it's just brilliant. And he's gorgeous in it. And he's, you know, ramrod straight in it. Mm-hmm. He has no, you know, his soul's gone. Right. That's his character, right? I went to the Crusades and I saw too many babies spiked. And so now I'm back in Sweden and I hate life. And he goes, I thought I was a little over the top.
And it was completely understated.
Yeah, it's like one of these movies where there's just close-ups of his eyes for 2 minutes of his eyes and him contemplating the injustice of the world. Yeah. You know, and like, you're not over the top.
I must know why this is necessary.
Yeah, I'm right. When the poor girl gets burned at the stake.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, no, that movie, I think the other part of it is when you see all these, and they don't just show old pictures. They showed Deliverance, and they had Burt Reynolds last year. And, right. You know, they show 70s pictures and 80s pictures. But when you see the older pictures, some of them, the scripts are so great. They just really hold up. Like, you're like, oh.
Yeah.
That's how you do a romantic comedy.
Right.
I don't need Jennifer Aniston and a dog.
Yeah.
I'll have Ginger Rogers. I'm not saying old movies are better than new movies. They're not. They're
just different.
They're different. And well, the motif was different. And
yeah, everything. Mm-hmm. The studio system produced different things. Yeah. And it's it isn't that one era is better than the other. It's just each era has produced different types of movies that are unique to that era. And
some of them are good, some are bad.
Yeah, some are bad. There's a lot of studio pictures that were horrible.
They made 200, 300 pictures a year every studio. So
yeah, they just
there's bound to be a lot of filler.
And most of those were Abbott and Costello movies.
Right. There's 100 Abbott and Costello. Yeah. Right. Like, I'd like to see an Abbott and Costello movie again that I haven't seen since I was little to see if it's still funny. Because I haven't watched one in ages. But my guess is they're not quite as funny as they were to me
when
I was seven.
How many a year did they make? I mean, it was...
Oh, three or four a year. Yeah. They were the biggest comedy team in the world.
Right.
For maybe 15 years. Man. The world. Bigger than Martin and Lewis. And then Martin and Lewis came along in the middle of Abbott and Costello. And then Abbott and Costello were on TV as well. And never great friends, I don't think. And Bud outlived Lou by a long time and evidently had a garage full of stuff. There's a book, who was it? Richard Annabelle wrote a book in the 70s and he went to visit him. And Bud goes, all right, let me take you back and fucking everything. The posters.
Wow.
And, you know, not happy about, you know, because they were huge, man. But they hadn't been a stage act, I don't think. I don't know if they were involved altogether. Well, anyways, they don't show so many comedies. The first 2 years, they let me present a show. Like, I didn't do the podcast. I got up and I talked about Road.
But now you're doing the podcast?
Right. So I did the podcast last year, and I did Adam's Rib, and hopefully this year. But we'll pick a vintage picture, probably a 40s or 50s.
Nice.
Tight movie.
Cool. All right.
Although I love, as you know, 70s movies. Right.
Well, we'll be covering the festival for sure. Alan Havey will not be available this year, but Neil will be going. And Graham and I are going to see if we can go this year.
Yeah. Well. Oh, yeah. Oh, Havey's not going?
No, he's got some big fancy gig somewhere.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah.
I always see Havey there.
Yep. Yeah.
There's about a bunch of guys you always see there.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's sick with it. He's sick with it, yeah.
So I'm hoping we're going to go.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely.
I think you'll enjoy it.
I'd love it.
A little different because it's not contemporary film.
Right.
And that's the biggest difference. But you're in a world of fucking movie stars.
Neil absolutely loved it. He went for the first time
last year.
It's got to
be the best thing in the world.
Like,
every year I'm either gone or something.
Right.
Or
yeah, we got to try to work it out this year for sure.
It's fine.
So, all right. So DVDs and
then you go have a burger, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. And you go to Musso and Frank's.
You can go have a vegetarian burrito.
They've got sides.
They've got sides.
Yeah, you can have the cream potatoes or whatever.
The steak joints have great sides. Yeah. I've eaten it.
I was going to say, the thing about a steak joint is you can get a baked potato, you can get spaghetti, the whole.
This cream spinach is, they know what they're doing over there. The
French bread.
Potatoes au gratin. Mm-hmm. Come on.
Oh, yeah.
So, Macbeth. Now, this is the Fassbender.
This is the Fassbender one that I saw when I was in Melbourne. Some film nerd fans actually took me to it, which was really cool. It's the opening battle scene is worth watching just on its own. Mm-hmm. And it's Fassbender doing Macbeth. It's pretty fantastic. So,
yeah, it had a very limited release here in the
crazy
in the
limited.
States.
It was in like half a theater.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to catching it on
if you obviously more than likely you missed this movie, so the fact that it's coming out on DVD or VOD or whatever.
Is it British?
Yeah, it's a British production.
I thought it was Australian.
It is. Well, I think it was like a co-Australian because
BBC put some money in.
Is he doing a fake Shakespeare British accent in it, or is he just... Well, you know, because you have to go tomato and tomato and tomato.
It's why Fassbender is an excellent actor, I think, because he can... That's such a challenge. And he does it...
It's like a mix between Magneto and Steve Jobs. Right?
Exactly. It's Steve Jobs from Magneto Macbeth. So check that out. That's perfect. Chris Mancini nailed Macbeth. That's why you should go watch it.
Is it set in the Middle Ages? Like the for real? Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they didn't do that. They kept it Middle Ages.
Yeah,
they
didn't update it with the...
No.
Kenneth Branagh were in Victorian times.
No, they didn't make him like, oh, he's a DJ.
Or he's a road warrior.
Yeah, yeah, he's a stockbroker.
Yeah. Right. So, Richard III is a fascist instead of...
And the next movie is the Peanuts movie. This is another one that I
spoiler alert.
I missed. Yeah,
he does not kick a field goal.
Whoa! You just it's ruined the film for me.
The tree eats his kite.
The tree eats his kite. Spoiler alert.
And we'll check this out on video too. And Victor Frankenstein. I don't know anybody who actually saw this movie. I don't even think Neil.
No idea what this is.
This is the the retelling of Frankenstein with Harry Potter in it.
It's a live action. It's not a cartoon.
Yeah, it's live action. Mm-hmm.
So is it supposed to be from the doctor's point of view?
Maybe.
It's Frankenstein's cousin Vic, and he runs like an auto parts store.
Hey, Vic! I got this guy over here with a bolt in his head. Put him up on the rack.
Yeah, so check that out.
Yeah. So, Daniel Radcliffe, he does these post-Harry Potter movies. Some of them hit, some of them don't.
And now this next section, guys, is a thing we're going to do with this new app, Spare Men, which is how you can talk to people and have conversations without like giving out your phone number. So we brought Jackie Cation in to talk about what she thought about the new Deadpool movie, since she's such a Marvel file. So here is Jackie Cation talking about Deadpool on Spare Men.
Hello. Hey!
Oh, it's working.
Jackie Cation is here on the Comedy Film Nerd Spare Men app. And Jackie, you've got a little less than 5 minutes, so we're going to talk about the movie Deadpool. So what did you think of it?
I enjoyed the movie Deadpool. Click. No. Hey, I saw the movie Deadpool because I read the comic books Deadpool. And so I enjoy almost all things Marvel. Not all things, but I enjoy many of the things. And Deadpool, first of all, went with my fella, Andy Ashcraft. And as we were standing in line, five young men, ages 10 to what, 15, said, "Hey, can you buy us tickets? Because you got to be 17 to get in."
And I hope you said no.
Of course I said no. And then I bought them five tickets for my nephews. And so... Because it's Deadpool. There's much worse things on the internet than Deadpool. And there were many, many gross things that happened to Deadpool. But when I was 15, I didn't get them. So I assumed, and these were five very blue-collar Mexican kids from Van Nuys. They were the nicest young men in the world. They were all like, "Thank you so much. Thanks, Aunt Jackie."
For hearing the "I'll sit on your face" joke.
I got to learn what pegging was, you guys.
So let me ask you this, Jackie.
It was educational. It was. there was a lot of, I didn't know that existed.
And it's International Women's Day today, you guys.
Oh. Well,
so find a lady and celebrate Deadpool.
Well, let me ask you this, Jackie, as we have about 3 minutes left. Compared to the comic, how was the film for you?
It did a really good job, actually, compared to the comic. It kept what I really liked about the movie. Two things. One was that there was that good when Marvel does it right, they get the good heart, where the entire purpose of the whole arc of the movie was about his looks and how he couldn't face the fact that now he looked like a burn victim.
Right.
And he had been such a handsome, handsome man. And then, of course, he meets Inara from Firefly, and and they're fine. They it turns out she's not. He's still ripped like Jesus, right? That was a Greg Berendt joke. But he's still very handsome for a guy whose skin is covered in weird.
Wouldn't our guests say he's Hollywood ugly?
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. And then what I really liked about it compared to the comic books is that it ended on a happy note, because oftentimes the comic books do not, because the guy's life is a disaster.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I like that he's going to be happy between this and Deadpool 2 or whatever.
Is this your favorite, Ryan Reynolds movie? Because it kind of...
Oh my God, I couldn't pick a Ryan Reynolds movie out of a pile of other dudes with haircuts. he's just another handsome guy who does a lot of sit-ups, as far as I can tell. Wasn't he in that Steve Carell movie that wasn't a Steve Carell movie?
I don't know. What movie is that?
You could go all the way back to Van Wilder if you like.
Which I understand this is essentially a remake of Van Wilder.
Right. Yeah, that's what Deadpool is. It's a
Van Wilder with swords.
Yeah, yes, and lots of guns. I loved how it opened. The credits were awesome.
Yeah,
that were great, best opening credits ever.
Yeah, the stinger was amazing. The thing after the credits was awesome. Who doesn't like Happy Deadpool? I love Happy Deadpool.
So what are you hoping for? We got about 30 seconds left to live. What are you hoping for in the sequel?
Other than seeing Cable.
Oh, I'm okay with Cable. I really want to see him with Captain America.
Oh.
He's such a little girl when it comes to Captain America. He's like, how can I be on Captain America's team? I want to just be on Captain America's team. And so that's what I would love to see.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Jackie Cation, for coming on Comedy Film Nerds using the Spareman app. Yay.
Well done, Jackie.
We'll talk to you soon.
Take care, you guys. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
All right.
That was cool. I knew she was going to like it.
I knew she was like it. She read the comics. I knew she was going to like it.
She loves comic books.
Yeah, she does. It's Hartford. She likes Iron Man too. Yeah. That's when you know, like,
right.
she's
you
on
can't
board.
Disappoint her.
No, she's on board with all of it.
She liked the Hulk movie.
She liked the Hulk
movie. Did she really?
People don't even know that exists.
Pooch.
That's,
I don't know.
Wow.
I stay away from superhero movies because I'm always disappointed.
All right. Site Spotlight.
Yeah, you know what? We were talking about these last week. There's a lot of new stuff on the site. We want to make sure you didn't miss anything. Neil put a London Has Fallen review up. God bless him. He went to see it. Rick Meyer's review of Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, Sword
the
of Destiny.
The billboard bunked my high so hard. It's all over L.A. for your listeners.
London Has Fallen is just like...
This time, it's fucking... Sorry, mate.
Yeah.
Oi, you! Watch this fucking film. Cinema. Oi.
Is he...
Fucking toilet. How dare you fucking look at me? Really? Is that what this is about?
Yeah. Are they going to just keep doing...
are going to keep falling.
They're going to just keep going. Yeah. The Kremlin has fallen. Yes, and there's one man
the
can
fix it.
The
Kiwis are falling.
God. Parliament. Like, what are they just like... Yep.
The Tokyo is falling.
The Tokyo Stock Exchange. Yes. The Nippon has gone down and he's going to...
Until there are no countries left.
Okay.
So we're going to be talking about Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, Sword of Destiny a little more on the next episode. But in the meantime, if you want to read Rick Meyer's review, it is absolutely hilarious. He is, let's just say, a little critical of the film.
No! Rick Meyer's is critical of a martial arts movie?
And the thing about Rick and CJ, their funniest reviews are when they tear into something, for sure. And CJ reviews How to Be Single, Son of Saul, and Hail Caesar and the Witch. Now, CJ and Neil split on the Witch. CJ really liked it, but Neil was a little more lukewarm
that
on the Witch.
That shocks me. I would have thought it would have gone the other way.
Me too.
Which
me too.
The Witch?
This is the artsy horror movie that's set in the Puritan times in Salem.
Okay,
I think it's Salem.
But, Hail Caesar! Wow, that did not. The preview didn't look good, baby.
So really enjoyed Hail Caesar. Actually,
did you?
Yeah,
okay,
check
good.
It out. Yeah, yeah.
All right. Thought it was okay until I did a spoiler episode and Chris and Paul Goebel talked me into liking it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Then you liked it from, you upgraded from okay to like.
I did.
Yeah. So,
yeah. Right, I mean, they waterboarded me, but I mean, it was an effective tool.
Yeah, it worked.
Because I go back and forth with the Coens.
Well, I think the point here is torture works.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think
here.
I already get it. Yeah. I'm an American.
But you know what's interesting is don't go by the trailer with Hail Caesar.
Okay, good.
It's definitely.
Yeah, because the trailer, I was like, this is making it look really cornball and goofy.
Yeah, it's not. It's more of a fun
it's
movie.
It's some cool stuff.
Yeah, all right.
So check out the site. There's a lot of stuff there. The other thing I want to mention to you guys, too, is you guys have really been supporting the store. We really appreciate it. And also, if you're buying on Amazon, you can go through our link. A lot of you guys have been doing that, too, our affiliate link. You're going to buy stuff anyway, Amazon or iTunes.
Yeah.
Go through us first.
Cool. We get a little taste. It doesn't cost you anything.
In fact, some people, and this is very very forward thinking, is they use our affiliate link and make that their Amazon link so they don't even have to go through our site anymore. They
Ingenious.
Just
thank you. They Dr. Mancini.
Yeah. the fans know what they're doing.
There's only one man that stands between the firewall. Graham Elwood.
Amazon has fallen.
So, and premiering this week, 10 Cloverfield Lane. We've seen a lot of teaser trailers about this movie. I'm cautiously optimistic.
I am too. I'm kind of thinking this could be, you know, is it a more crazy action-packed room? or is
it it's Room with Monsters?
Yeah, is it Room with Monsters? So I don't know.
I love address movies. Yeah. 42 Baker Court. What? What happened there?
You'll find out.
Last house on the left.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So we'll
see. We'll see. And the interesting thing is too, it's such a tease. Like, you don't know, is there a monster in it? It's set in the same world, but you're like, the tag is kind of like where, well, the monsters come in all different shapes and size, and well, does that mean
so
we're not going to see
so
a monster?
John Goodman's the
monster. John Goodman's the monster. Yeah, yeah. So does that mean we're not going to see all a monster at the end? I kind of want to.
If I don't see the monster at the end,
yeah, I'll be a little disappointed.
I'm gonna kick it. I'm gonna kick this movie.
The Brothers Grimsby. This is another spy parody movie with Sacha Baron Cohen.
I prefer his scripted stuff because as I've talked about before in the show, when he does the improv thing, it's always funny, but it always gets old for me because it's like, I get it. This person doesn't know that you're doing the fake guy.
Right. Situation in a row.
Right. I got it.
It's great for a sketch.
It's great for a sketch, but a 90 minute film. No. Mm. So I don't know. We'll see. It could be funny.
This next movie looks absolutely hilarious. I don't know who was demanding this movie. The Young Messiah. This is Jesus as a kid.
Nice.
You know, his formative teenager years.
Wasn't it the Ted Cruz campaign?
Yes. absolutely hilarious.
Is it a comedy or?
No.
Oh.
No.
Oh, I thought if it was a comedy, it'd be great.
No, I think the
Young
Messiah. Oh, my
God, Greg, your reaction right now is perfect.
Wow. It could have been like, you know, because like, well, what are we going to call it? Can we call it Young Jesus? Like, well, yeah, like Young Guns. Let's do, yeah, Young Jesus.
Right, and Lou Diamond Phillips.
Yeah, it'd be great.
Pontius Pilate.
So
it's a Jesus origin story.
So it's a Jesus origin story. Yeah, it's exactly. Yeah. It's we
Holy
find
Ghost
out,
Protocol.
Yeah, yeah.
Good night, everybody. That's why I get the middle money.
And, yeah. You know, I think
that's
it's
why I can't afford a rental car in Kansas City.
Hello, Lyft. Where are you? Oh, you don't have Lyft in Kansas.
Oh, I need a sandwich.
Yeah.
So I think this Young Messiah will be a really entertaining origin story, so you can find out finally where Jesus got his powers.
Since there's no source material for this,
yeah,
a very exciting extrapolation. The Bible, quiet on this matter.
Yeah,
yes.
They don't,
so,
they just sort
so
of...
find out where Jesus got his powers.
Okay.
Find out the origin story.
Oh, can I recommend a book off the back of this?
Yeah.
When you mentioned it, the reason I asked if it was a comedy is, oh, God.
Well, it's based on the book Saviorhood.
Really? With a soundtrack by Judas Priest.
Yes.
Christopher Moore wrote lots of best-selling books, Practical Guide to Demon Keeping and all that jazz, and You Suck and this and that. But he wrote a book called Lamb, and the premise of the book is Jesus' best boyhood friend is resurrected from the dead by an archangel and sent to a hotel room in New York where they ordered pizza and they're watching Jerry Springer. And the archangel says to him, "You are to write your gospel." And he's like, "My name's Biff." And in the first paragraph is, "And so shall you know me, da 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 da. I am Biff, friend of Jesus." And the first scene is he meets Jesus in the town square and they're little kids in Bethlehem. And Jesus is with James, his younger brother. And James is smashing a lizard with a rock over and over. And Jesus keeps putting it in his mouth and it comes back alive and he hands it to his brother. And so it goes from there. They grow up together. They go to adventures. It's like how young Jesus becomes Jesus. And so when you said that, I thought, oh, I read one that was really funny.
That'd be great.
I didn't realize it was going to be like, you know, crappy overhead shots of him. And oh, God, what are they going to make Jesus do as a child? Because in this one, he's a Buddhist, you know.
Oh, man.
That's where he learns the trick to make the fishes, you know.
Like, yeah. Aww.
The Buddhist taught him that. That's so great.
One grain of rice, and then it becomes a bowl of rice.
Wow. Buddha was around 500 years before
Well,
Jesus.
Exactly. There's so much that, you know, that's why this, whoa.
There's some history.
All right.
Great.
Is that our episode? Is that it?
That is our episode.
Oh, well, Gregory Proops, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Always a treat. Of course. So tell people where they can find you, upcoming shows. What do you got?
Thank you. Tonight I will be at the Cinefamily in Hollywood, or Tuesday rather, the 9th, doing We're going to show Times of Harvey Milk. That's the Greg Proops Film Club. Then I'm going to Kansas City, Missouri. I'll be at the Kansas City Improv Thursday night. We'll be doing the podcast, The Smartest Man in the World. Then I will be in Europe for your European friends. I'll be at the Comedy Store on the 16th. I'll be in Glasgow at the Glasgow Comedy Festival the 18th and 19th. The 22nd, I'll be in Antwerp, 24th in Stockholm, and then back to the States. I have a book called The Smartest Book in the World. I have a podcast called The Smartest Man in the World. I have a new album out called In the Ballpark. You can go to gregproops.com. No, I'm not going to spell it for you. And, of course, the podcast and everything's free on iTunes like everybody else.
Nice. And, of course, guys, if you don't already have the Comedy Film Nerd Guide to Movies, he has the Film Noir chapter in it.
Yes. And before he leaves, we're going to have him sign a couple.
Yeah, we're going to chain him to a thing and make him sign 500 books.
Yeah.
Perfect. It's more than my editor maybe.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thank you so much. Like we said, LA Podfest, September 23 through the 25th. Go to the go to the website, lapodfest.com. You guys have been great for supporting this, and you know, we appreciate all of your whatevers, your comments and your positive reviews and everything else.
Absolutely. We love your feedback. We really appreciate it.
Especially when it's succinct and positive.
Yes.
That helps. Long and negative. Yeah.
So we well, you've got some dates coming up, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I will be headlining in beautiful Appleton, Wisconsin at the Skyline Comedy Cafe, March 17 through 19. I'm also in beautiful Lake Havasu, March 30 and 31st.
Is the London Bridge still there?
Yeah. The London Bridge is still there.
The real one.
Yeah. Oh, a real one.
Yeah, yeah, they brought one. There's some crazy shenanigan story or some rich guy built one or wanted.
Right. Well, the real one's in Arizona, right?
Right. That's the one at Lake Havasu.
That's the actual.
Well, it's but there's hundreds of bridges that cross the Thames. It's a bridge from London.
Right.
I don't know if it's My Fair Lady, London Bridge is Falling Down kind of. Take the key and lock her up.
Yes. So come out and walk across the London Bridge, guys. So. Yeah. And then I'll be in Vegas in April.
Oh, cool. And then I wanted to mention I did a couple podcasts you could check me out on. I did my